Texas? Cities, thousands and thousands of people, and he tells them, this is the land that I'm going to give you.
Well, was it an important trade route?
What?
Was Israel at that time?
At the time, it would probably was an important trade route.
That may be,
but still, I mean, today, what's the biggest point, you know, world news? I mean, I'm listening, I can't stand to listen to CNN anymore. I mean, I listened to it a couple times just to get news because I'm out of, you know, I don't have Israeli news. Everything was how terrible we are. And how we're murdering civilians, and we're in occupied territory. Even the good old United States of America, okay, will not have its embassy in Jerusalem because it doesn't want, it doesn't want to offend Arabs, or it doesn't want to support the fact that Jerusalem is the capital of a Jewish state, right? This is the United States. So let's go back a little bit. How is Abraham supposed to inherit Eretz Israel? Is he supposed to murder these people? Is he supposed to wage a war and displace them and become occupied territory? Well, that's probably what we assume is supposed to happen. There's an interesting another possibility. What would be the other possibility? Not wipe them out, but convert them. Right? He's a good orator. You know, he's a persuasive individual. Go in and maybe he'll give you this land and you're going to convert these people. And reality is, he had a chance to do that. Right? We know that, remember the war with the four kings against the five kings, and Lot is captured. Abram decides that he's going to go and try to bring people back. And he goes, he basically defeats the most powerful army in the world. I mean, again, think about it, it's crazy. A yeshiva guy, a Rosh Yeshiva, gets together. He has about 300 people in his yeshiva. Right? This major army that's just conquered the civilized world. And he said, but, you know, but they have to, and they conquered civilized world, they have to take captive his nephew. So he decides, well, okay, we'll close the yeshiva, and I'm going to go get him back. He had in mind. And that's exactly what he does. And when he comes back from that, he basically conquered the entire Middle East. And they offer him to be the leader. The question, of course, comes in is why didn't he accept? If God told him this is going to be your land, and you are right, and this is where you're going to live, and you're going to inherit it, and it happened within a short amount of time, so why did Abraham Avinu turn it down? And he gave it up. In fact, the Gemara Nedarim, listen to the Gemara Nedarim, because it should be very problematic. Listen to what the Gemara says. Amar Avo, Amar Av Eliezer. Why was Abraham Avinu punished? Why was Abraham Avinu punished that his children should be in Egypt for 210 years? Three reasons. Number one, v'pnei she'asa angariya b'tamidei chachamim, because he closed yeshiva. Very relevant topic. We're not going to talk about today. Right? Should yeshiva bachrim go to the yeshiva, go to the army? He closed yeshiva. Shneamar vayorak es chanichav yulidei beiso. So one reason is because he was punished. He did something terrible. He closed yeshiva. He put uniforms on his students and he went to war. Shmuel amar b'pnei shehifriz amidosav shalom kodesh baruch. He doubted God. Shneamar v'ma'edak yirashena. He asked God, you're promising me the land of Israel. How do I know that I'm going to inherit it? Three. Now listen to the last one. Rabbi Yochanan Amar. Shehifrish b'nei Adam likanei takas kanfei hashchina. Because Avram discouraged people from coming and being involved in the Shechina, in joining the community of Hashem. Shehne Amar. Tein li et hanefesh rechush kach l'cha. Right? The Melech Sodom says to Abraham Avinu, give me the souls, you can have the money, but give me the people back, give me my citizens back. Now, listen to this. Any problems? Have any problems on this Gemara? Should I repeat it again just outside? Okay, why was Avram's Avinu's children punished? That's what the Gemara's question. And he gives three answers. Avram did three terrible things. Number one, he closed yeshiva to go rescue his nephew Lo. Number two, the second thing he did was because he doubted HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He said, how do I know that I'm going to inherit the land of Israel? And number three, Rav Yochanan says, because he dissuaded people from coming under the Shekhinah, he could have converted the entire civilized world when he had the opportunity to, and he turned down that opportunity. Any problems on this Gemara? Yes.
First of all, it says before that in brief Antarin that he showed the writing of a Hemipo and Vyak Shevel of Staka. So he did believe. I mean, the text said that he believed him.
Vyak Shevel of Staka was stated regarding the fact that he promised him he'd have children, even though, you know, biologically that was impossible.
But it's part of the whole Nebuah about that. And the other thing is about, I think he told him before that about the 210 years, like before this happened.
The Bruce Van Absurm happened shortly after this, right? But the question, right? But the question is, when he said Bamaya Da Kirishan, what?
The Bruce Van Absurm happened when Avraham Avinu was only 75.
Yes, so?
This Avraham came when he was 80 here in Israel.
Well, first of all, there's a whole debate, right? First of all, there's a whole question of exactly when the Bris Ben Absurm actually happened. If you go chronology from the Torah's perspective, it seems that the Bris Ben Absurm happened at least after Avraham Avinu was already in Eretz Israel. That's simple pshat. Now, the fact that he certainly asked the question. I mean, the Gemara is assuming he asked the question. But what was his question? Did he doubt God? Did he doubt when God said, I'm going to use him? He didn't doubt God. What did he doubt? He doubted his children. What he basically said is, you're giving it to me, but how do I know my kids are going to deserve it? You look at from Adam from the beginning of creation to Avraham Avinu, most people fail. Adam's kids weren't so great, and Noah's kids weren't so great, and nobody was great. Right? The whole generation died. So how do I know? That's all he was saying. He wasn't questioning God. Are there any more difficult problems on the text?
Yeah, how come he was punished for closing the yeshiva? I mean, he was going out to save lives.
So first of all, okay.
But you know, it was a yeshiva in the first place.
What?
You could assume that he had a yeshiva.
Yes.
I know that's an interpretation.
That is that's certainly the interpretation that the Gemara is making. I want to take the question. Your question, I want to make the second question. I'll tell you what I think the first question is. Look at the first part. Why was Avraham Avinu punished, listen to the statement of the Gemara, that his children had to go into slavery in Egypt? That statement, what's difficult about that statement?
You're visiting
children are not punished.
If Avraham Avinu did something wrong, why is his children punished?
Myself
is similar body means, doesn't necessarily mean that if my great-great-grandfather did something wrong, that I'm going to be punished, certainly if I didn't follow in his footsteps. We'll get to myself as a similar body in the second pass, but what did they do wrong? Question number one. And if he did do, and then his second part, did he really do something wrong? Halachically. Okay, if somebody would go to the Rosh Hashiva, that's a psak halacha. Okay, there is a Jew, we have this is halacha l'maisa today as well. You know, there's a Jew kidnapped, right? So I try to capture an African, you got to say a frum Jew was kidnapped in Gaza. You'd ask it, right? And you have Hezder guys that are going into the army. You go to the Rosh Hashiva. Is it mutter for them to go and try and make a mission to bring him back, yes or no? What would the Psak Halacha be?
Of course.
Absolutely. No question about it. So what did he do wrong?
So
you're
saying
it was Nidani, Nidani, Nidani. No, what I'm saying is I'm questioning the Gemara.
So you're saying that he had
the
issue,
but
he was a rabbi.
Yeah.
He probably didn't want like his children. He wasn't prepared to
educate
them in
Torah. What I'm saying is I'm questioning, what does the Gemara mean when it said, why was Avraham Avinu punished? Because he closed yeshiva to save his nephew. Question number one would be, did he do anything wrong? And you're assuming he did a terrible thing. From our perspective, from a halakhic perspective, from a Shulchan Aruch perspective, what he did was totally mutter. So then, the same thing even, what's he talking about here? He could have converted the whole world. Well, what are you talking about? Talk about Canaanim? Did we want Canaanim to come into be? That was the nation he was going to build. And by the way, after he won this tremendous battle, shouldn't they have come on their own and said, wow, what a miracle that occurred. Let's learn from you, Avraham Avinu. They shouldn't have been forced. I mean, did he do anything wrong by turning them down? Same thing is true even when a convert comes today. We try to dissuade him. He doesn't voluntarily come to us. So what's the Gemara talking about? That he did something terribly wrong and that's why he had to go to Mitzrayim. I think the pshat in the Gemara is not that Avraham Avinu did something wrong, but there are three points, and I don't want to go through all the points. One point is relevant to me. When Avraham Avinu says, "Bama eda ki rishena," how do I know that my kids are going to merit Eretz Yisrael being in their possession for thousands of years? That means he entertained the possibility of Jewish existence without living in the land of Israel on a long-term basis. And that is something that God said that you have to realize, that that's something that cannot happen. You have to realize the significance of Eretz Yisrael to Am Yisrael. And therefore, you know what's going to happen? We're going to put you in the best place possible. Where are you going to go? You're going to go to Egypt. Egypt, you couldn't ask for a better place, better than Bushkill Falls Convention Center. Okay? Right? It was the most powerful nation of the time, the most affluent nation of the time, and the Jews came in the best of circumstances. They were welcomed. Yaakov Avinu was welcomed. He was mishpacha of the prime minister. His son Yosef was running the country. They got great jobs. They got, you know, business positions, accounting jobs, lawyers, obviously doctors. I mean, they were running the country. You couldn't have it any better. And what should have been their expectation? I mean, look what we did for this country. Egypt would have died during the 7 years of famine. We physically saved every single citizen. We brought economic prosperity. Everybody had to pay for food that was coming out of Egypt. Yosef made Egypt what it was. What logically, Hakaras Hatov should have been given to this people. And yet what happened in Egypt? We saw what happened in Egypt and how much Hakaras Hatov they actually had. So what is this Gemara saying? I have to ensure that the Jewish people from a long-term basis realize how critical Eretz Israel is to their survival. And therefore it became necessary for Avram's grandchildren to go into the best possible scenario, the best place you could possibly imagine, and to see how miserable it would be in a long-term basis to come to appreciate what Eretz Israel is all about. So let's get back to our original question then. The first mitzvah given to Avraham Avinu is the obligation to go to Eretz Israel. Why specifically Eretz Israel? Why couldn't God pick Pinek, or God pick Toronto, or pick so many other places that seemed to be at first glance, you know, there was nobody living there, they didn't have to conquer any people, the climate is better, the opportunities are better. Why dafka Eretz Israel? That's the question that I want to deal with. And I want to offer up a couple of possibilities. Number one, the Kuzari. The Kuzari is an interesting pshat. Let me read it to you. I see that, first of all, after me, before the Kuzari, let me just go to one thing. Like, there's a Kapitel Tilim, Kuf Hei says as following. So it's a Tilim that we all know. Zuchor Liyola Briso, Dabar Sila Lela Dor. Asher Karas es Avram Ushvaso liYitzchak, viAmidel liYaakov lechok, liYisrael bris olam. Eretz Israel was given to Bnei Israel as a bris, as a covenant. What does that mean? Now, whenever I explain the difference between a promise and bris, I always explain with the following story that happened to me as a child. It was 2 weeks before Hanukkah. Okay, and for those of you who are a little bit older, you may have remembered Walt Disney had a three-part series. Davy Crockett. Tess Parker starred as Davy Crockett. And the craze that year was everybody for Christmas was getting coonskin caps and Davy Crockett uniforms with rifles. That's what every little kid dreamed about. There was no Toys R Us at that point in time, but that's what everybody wanted. And my parents promised me that for Hanukkah, first night of Hanukkah, I would get a Davy Crockett outfit. Okay. A couple days before Hanukkah, my brother and I had a slight altercation. I sort of pushed him off. Well, I wouldn't call it a second floor porch, but on the landing was that was about, you know, a half a floor above ground level. He cried like a baby. His foot blew up a little bit, you know, he had to be rushed to the hospital. I got whelped by my parents, I got spanked, I got yelled at. Anyway, he had x-rays taken, it wasn't broken. Baruch Hashem, 30, 40 years later, he's walking on both feet, he's fine, married with children and grandchildren, everything is fine. So I forgot the incident. Comes the first night of Hanukkah, okay? We light the candles, we get the preliminaries over with, we light the candles, let's get to the main attraction, the distribution of presents. My parents give me, okay, Maury, here's your present. They give me a bag of chocolate, you know, these candy coins. I said, very cute. That's very sweet. I'm playing on that. Where's my David Crockett outfit? So I remember my father, the final brother, tell me, you must be kidding. After what you did to your brother, you know, a couple days ago, we're going to reward you with a David Crockett outfit? I said, but you promised. You promised. So what's a promise? Promise is assuming if you maintain the status quo, you were a good boy, and you deserve to be rewarded with a Davy Crockett outfit, you'll get it. But you violated the status quo. After that, you can't possibly expect that we were going to reward you with a Davy Crockett outfit. Now, the fact remains that I cried and yelled so much 2 days later, they did get me a Davy Crockett outfit. But that's the difference between the nature of a promise and a bris. When Avraham Avinu asked for Ma Eidah Kirashena, he was saying, I deserve Eretz Israel, but how am I supposed to know that my kids, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, how do I know that they're going to deserve it? So God says to him, first point, it's an important point, that the relationship between the Jewish people and Eretz Israel is a bris relationship, not a promise relationship. And this is something, by the way, that Christianity, this is where we're very much in disagreement with. Christianity, what does Christianity claim? Yes, the Jews were the chosen people. Right? They claim Sinai happened. They believe in Revelation. But you blew it, and you were thrown out during Bayit Rishon. And God, in his mercy, gave you a second chance and brought you back during Bayit Sheni, and you made the same mistake. After that, that's it. You're out of the picture, and there's a new Israel. And for 2,000 years, they seem to be correct. Why did we buy that? Because the point is, we don't have a promise from a Kodesh Baruch Hu Eretz Yisrael. We have a bris, we have a covenant. And just as a Jew cannot opt out of the covenant, God cannot opt out. Eretz Yisrael will always be ours. We will always be the chosen people. No matter what, we could be punished. Maybe that will explain why we're punished, but we'll never be replaced. So the first point is that we have a bris relationship with Eretz Yisrael. But Rav Kook says there's a second point mentioned in the Tefillah. Ki chok hu. It is a chok. The relationship between us and Eretz Israel is a chok. What's a chok? It's a law that's not, at first glance, logical. What does that mean, Rav Kook? Rav Kook says that means two things. The first thing it means is that the Jew will never have a permanent residence in any other country in the world except in Eretz Yisrael. There's a, I wouldn't say colleague of mine, a Rebbe of mine, I won't mention his name because I don't know if the story is 100% complimentary, but he was asked to speak at a dedication of a brand new shul in a community in New York. And this community spent millions of dollars on the shul and countless hours with architects and engineers, and he was a rabbi from Eretz Yisrael, and he was a very prominent rabbi and a guest speaker. The first thing he said when he got up there says is, all this time and all this effort and all your money that you spend is a bracha levatala. Because there is no permanent residence for a Jew anywhere else but in Eretz Israel. Now again, I don't think that's what they wanted to hear at that moment, but that's the reality. So the first part is that, you know, and it's true. How many places have Jews gone? There isn't a country. I remember when I was a kid, my father, would never buy anything from Germany or from Japan. Because, you know, we fought in World War II, you know, we don't buy anything Japanese, we might buy anything German. But I remember at one point thinking, there isn't a country in the world that didn't throw out a Jew somewhere down the line. There's certainly not any European country, right? Whether it's Spain, whether it's Portugal, whether it's England, whether it's Germany, I mean, the whole, that was Jewish history. So the idea is that the Jew, no matter how much they contribute and how much they dedicate to a country, will never find permanent residence except in the land of Israel. But the opposite is also true. That a non-Jew, another nation, will never find permanence in Eretz Israel. No matter how many people conquer Eretz Israel, they'll never be able to develop it. This is a famous, the Ramban. Ramban says, I'm sure most of you know this, he quotes in the Tokacha, V'chimasha amar v'pasuk lamed beis, v'shammu alel eivechem. The Tokacha says that your enemies will be destroyed on Eretz Yisrael. He b'sarat tova mubuseret b'chol ha-goliyot. The Ramban says this is good news within the bad news. She'ein arseinu mekabelet et oyveinu. That our land will not accept our enemies. The gamzu raya gadola v'atacha lanu, and this is a proof to us, he lo timsa b'chol ha'yishuv eretz, asher hitova rechava, asher hoitza noshevet me'olam, v'hi chareva kamoha. You won't find in history Rome. It's true, once upon a time, Rome ruled the world. Rome does not rule the world today. But Rome is still a major city with millions of people living there. Greece, I name the country. Once the sun never set on the English Empire, now it doesn't shine on the English Empire. But still, England is a major country, and it's developed. Name a country that was, like you said, fought over, a major trade route that everybody wanted, that was so prosperous. But the moment that the Jews left it, it turned into a desert and wasteland. You won't find anything like that in the world. Why is that true, says the Ramban? Based on the Tocha. God's promise, it's not logical, it's a chok, that the only people that will be able to develop Eretz Israel will be the Jews. When we were in Gaza, you know, a number of years ago, right, what the exports that they had, the development, right, they gave it over to the Arabs. It became a desert, once again. That's Haftocha to us, and that's the chok. But we all know, you've heard this before, but it's just interesting. Mark Twain writes on his visit to Eretz Israel, let me just quote it, if I can read it because it's small. Right, we traveled some miles of desolate country whose soil is rich enough but is given wholly to weeds. A silent, mournful expanse. A desolation is here that not even imagination can grace with the pomp of life and action. We reached Tabor safely. We never saw a human being on the whole route. We pressed on towards the goal of our crusade, renowned Jerusalem. The further we went, the hotter the sun got, and the more rocky and bare, repulsive and dreary, the landscape became. There was hardly a tree or a shrub anywhere. Even the olive and the cactus, those fast friends of a worthless soil, had almost deserted the country. No landscape exists that is more tiresome to the eye than that which bounds the approaches to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is a mournful, dreary, and lifeless. I would not desire to live here. It is a hopeless, dreary, heartbroken land. Palestine sits in sackcloth and ashes. Over it broods the spell of a curse that has withered its fields and fettered its energies. Palestine is desolate and unlovely. And why should it be otherwise? Can the curse of the deity beautify a land? Palestine is no more of this workday world. It is a sacred to poetry and tradition. It is a dreamland. Now this is what, right, we're talking about Mark Twain. We're talking about 1869 here on this. It was a wasteland. Why? Because it's a hope that the only people that would be able to successfully develop Eretz Israel will be the Jews. Okay, so we've determined that we have a strong relationship with Eretz Israel, that it was the first mitzvah given to Avraham Avinu, and that God specifically wanted Eretz Israel. But the question I still have is, why? Why? There are so many other logical options. Why specifically this piece of territory? And I want to offer you two possibilities. Number one is the Kuzari. Look what the Kuzari says. Let me ask you, how many people here from the United States as opposed to you? Okay. If I would ask you, the best potato, which would be the state to get the best potato in the United States? What would you say?
Idaho.
Okay. Idaho. The best peach?
Georgia.
The best orange?
Florida.
Oh, best blueberry?
I think New Jersey.
Okay, but anyway, everybody asks the same thing without question. Now, you can grow oranges anywhere. You can grow potatoes anywhere. Why is it that Idaho is known for its potatoes, or Florida is known for its oranges? Right, there are reasons, okay. But the fact remains that the physical world is, right, there are differences. Even though there is air everywhere, and there's rain everywhere, and there's sun everywhere, for whatever reasons, there are certain areas in the physical world that are more appropriate for growing a potato than in other places. The reality is, says the Kuzari, you can find God anywhere. God is here, there, up there, up, down, all around. God is everywhere. But if you want, this is the standard joke they say in Eretz Israel, right? You want to communicate with God, you can communicate with God anywhere. But in Eretz Israel, it's a local phone call. Mm-hmm. Right? The fact is you want a land that is special, that has a spiritual superiority to every land, that's Eretz Israel. That's what the Kuzari says. God picked it for one simple reason. It was the place most appropriate to develop extreme spirituality. That's what the Kuzari says. But there are other possibilities besides. Not everybody agrees with the Kuzari. When you look at a description of Eretz Israel, I want to quote you two sources from Devarim. This is what it says. V'shamarta mitzvot Hashem Elokecha lelechet bedrachav uliyira oto. Ki Hashem Elokecha miviyacha al Eretz tova. Eretz nachle mayim ayinot utahomot. Yotzim v'dekha abahar. God is bringing you to a good land, interestingly enough, but a lot of streams, a lot of water. Eretz chita usara gefen v'te'ena v'rimon. Eretz deshemen v'devash. Eretz asher lo v'miskenot tocha v'olechem. Lo tepsar kol bo. I'm bringing you to a land of unbelievable economic possibilities. The first thing which is being described is interesting. Not being described as a land, unlike the Kuzari said, of spiritual possibilities. I'm bringing to a land of unbelievable economic possibilities. A land of unbelievable materialism. The irony even today is in many circles, people are making aliyah because the economy in Eretz Israel is stronger, or was at least, than the economy in the United States of America. A land of unbelievable material possibilities. That's a land where God will bring us. A land where, materialism is so strong and we can have this rich life. That doesn't sound what we would have thought God wanted for Avraham Avinu. The next thing, this is what it says. Shema Yisrael Kalaver Yom Et HaYarden Lavol Reshet Goyim Gedolim Va'atzumim Mimecha. You're going to go, and who's there? Like we asked this question before, why didn't God put us to Uganda? You're going to a land that has armies that are 10 times more powerful than you are. Arim gedolot u'btzurot, and they have large fortified cities. Am gadol v'ram b'nei anakim. There's big people, they are physically superior, they're the children of the giant. Asher atah yadata v'atah shemata. Mi yitzatzev l'fnei b'nei anak. Who could stand up against the children of the giants? But God will pass before you. God put us in the worst possible neighborhood. This was not Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. There are worst natural enemies were our neighbors. Ammon, Moab, Amalek. Why? Why put us, if you would ask me what should have been the reason to put us in Eretz Israel, the Kuzari. It has spiritual possibilities with Israel. According to, you look through the Chumash, It's described as a land of unbelievable materialism, which seems to be totally against what a religion would want to have. And you're surrounded by people that want to kill you. By the way, it's still true today. The worst possible place for Jews to be is in the Middle East. So why in the world did God put us there? What was he thinking? Very simply. Because life isn't meant to be, you know, just simply go with the flow. Yes, there's unbelievable materialism. You had to really fight against it. And if you gave into the materialism, what was going to happen? The neighbors on the outside were going to come in and attack you. And it happened constantly throughout Jewish history. God put us into a place where we had to rely upon God. Because if we didn't, we were going to be in trouble. Put us in a check and balance scenario, be able to give us the temptation, but yet give us the opportunity to overcome that, become the type of people that we were supposed to become. Life wasn't meant to be easy. Avraham Avinu, when he comes here, he says, "Give me 10 nisyanos." Life is meant for us to grow from our personal experiences. And that's why God picks the land of Israel. Because on one hand, yes, you have tremendous, you know, temptations, but you also have with the Zari, you have a land that has the closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the ability for you to be able to overcome the temptations. There's a famous medrash, and I'm sure almost all of you know, a medrash by regarding Yaakov Avinu. When Yaakov Avinu died, okay, Yaakov Avinu dies, and they bring him back to be buried in Moris HaMachpelah. Comes back, they make, and Yosef comes back, and all the brothers come back, and they're on the right out of Moris HaMachpelah, and who shows up? Esau shows up. And he says, basically, you know, what are you doing here? So they said, we're burying Yaakov next to his wife Leah. Says, well, that's my spot. I own the spot. I mean, there were two burial plots left in Moris HaMachpelah. One went to your father. He decided not to use it for himself. He wanted to bury his wife. The other one is mine. There's a famous story about they got into an argument. No, my father bought it. He said, well, show me the deed of sale. It's in a safe somewhere in Egypt. Well, without that, you know, and there were no fax machines there. You couldn't get it. So they were debating whether they should send something back and who were they going to send back to do it. And then one of the grandchildren who was there, you know, went crazy. What are we going to do this? They got into a fight with Esav. What happened? He chopped off Esav's head. Esav's head rolls into Moris HaMachpelah. What is that? So there are four couples buried in Moris HaMachpelah and the head of Esav. What does that mean? Esav, we know, was born with unbelievable temptations. Even when he was in utero, he wanted to run out to Avodah Zarah. And everyone said, then why should he be held responsible for not making the right decisions? Because he had the brains and the intelligence to overcome his bodily temptations. His head should have gotten him into Moris HaMachpelah. His body that kept him out. That's the message of the Medrash. The same thing is true why God put us into Eretz Yisrael. Yes, there are temptations in Eretz Yisrael, and yes, it's a bad neighborhood, and yes, if you don't deserve protection of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, you're in a lot of trouble. Now, there's a very, very major debate going on in Eretz Yisrael. I'm sure you all follow it. Should Haredim be forced to go into the army? Now, I'm not going to get involved in that discussion now. That's for a different time and place. But there is no question that in theory, what the Haredim are saying is true. We can't rely just on man to man and tank to tank. We have to have a Kodesh Baruch Hu on our side. If God is not on our side, we are in a lot of trouble. I mean, even today, I mean, I'm sure you following the news, what's going on in Eretz Israel. But I happen to know that I heard it. Well, this is a deep authority. He's summoned from the Moshe Bak kitchen. Okay? Mm-hmm. He can't get married. His brother is in the Shabbat. He verified all this information about what were the Gazans planning to do with all these tunnels. And he said they had that, and they captured all these people. They had information. They were planning a Rosh Hashanah surprise that they were going to send in 200 soldiers to each tunnel. These tunnels went into the dining rooms of every kibbutz and moshav in the south. And on Rosh Hashanah, when most of the army is home and people were in shul, they were going to come out of these tunnels, murder hundreds, if not thousands, of Israelis, kidnap countless hundreds, and held them hostage, and who knows what bedlam they were going to cause. And there were articles being written on now and how this happened. What happened? What spoiled the surprise? The whole events and things. Again, terrible events that happened. But if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not watching over us, then we're in a lot of trouble. That's why God specifically put us in a bad neighborhood with temptations, but yet a land that had unbelievable spiritual possibilities. Brings us to today. What's going on today? Is there something special going on in Eretz Yisrael? And I want to quote you just the last two marmakomos that I have put down on the sheet. Amar Rabbi Abba, Ein l'chakeit megula mizeh. There is no greater indication that the geula is near than the following example. This is a sign to know that redemption is just around the corner. He quotes a pasuk in Yechezkel. V'atem hare Yisrael anachem titnu uprichem tisu la'ami Yisrael. What does that pasuk mean? Rashi, listen to what Rashi says. Kishetitein Eretz Yisrael piriyah. When Eretz Yisrael will once again give off its fruit in a positive manner, az yikra paket, then you know that the end is near. V'ein l'chaket m'gulat yoter, and there's no greater sign than that. And that end, I want to bring you something that sounds a little bit ridiculous. This is a bag of carrots. Okay? Now, I just came during the summers, although I'm a rabbi during the year. During the summer, I run a kitchen in Camp Moshavah. So it's about 58 minutes away from here. Not 58 minutes exactly from here. In the middle of nowhere. This is not New York City. We get our produce not from New York. We get our produce from Scranton, Pennsylvania. Okay? Not the biggest hub of Jewish community. Okay? This is a 50-pound bag of carrots that came from my kitchen. Okay? On the bottom it says, and I'm sure most people in Scranton are very concerned about this, produce of Israel, trumot and maestros have been taken, right, from these carrots. Right? Carrots in Scranton, Pennsylvania, that trumot and maestros have been taken from, we're exporting fruits and vegetables and high-tech and everything else throughout the entire world. Right? There isn't a, when I talk about fruit, there isn't an Apple computer, right, in this country that doesn't work on Israeli technology. You know, every year, at the end of the Pesach Seder, or at the end of Yom Kippur, we talk about, we sing L'Shana Habav Yishalayim, next year in Jerusalem. What I'd like us to think about, with all the problems that we have going on there now, and believe me, we have a lot of problems. And I'm speaking, I'm sure for those of you who heard my wife this morning, I'm speaking as a father of three boys in the Army, two of which are actively in the Army as we speak. I had this horrific conversation with my son this morning, who has actually got out for 48 hours. You know, I'm having him describe seeing a friend of his being blown up in front of his eyes, who's just a few feet away from him, and the fact that he's the medic and how he's screaming, I couldn't save him, I couldn't save him, I couldn't save him, and my son is not a crier. So we are going through horrific times now. There's no question about it. But there's one thing I think that we as a Jewish people have to realize is that Eretz Yisrael, there is no other place in the world that is safer Jew than in Eretz Yisrael. In Germany, when the Jews, I have a friend of mine who always gives a speech, he shows his grandfather. This was his, maybe it was his great-grandfather, I don't remember, in a German uniform, who fought in World War I, and all the medals that he received because he was dedicated to Germany. And then, that soldier, they don't even know where he's buried in Germany. There is no place in the world, right, that is safer than Eretz Yisrael. And after 2,000 years, unheard of in history that a people who has been exiled from his land finally comes back. And we've been given the opportunity to actually come and make Eretz Yisrael, you know, our home. So instead of possibly thinking, and again, and I know it's difficult, and I'm not trying to, it is difficult, people have obligations, and people have families, and there are, and it's not easy, but at least what should be on our minds is the thought of the possibility of not only next year in Jerusalem, but why not this year in Jerusalem? We've been given a gift, right? There is a bris relationship with Eretz Israel. There is a chok relationship with Israel. It is the place for a person who's really concerned about spirituality, is concerned about the future of the Jewish people, right? We're, all of us now have to think about what Eretz Israel is all about. What would be even in the United States if there would not be an Eretz Israel protecting Jews around the world? Right? And I remember when people asked me, you know, are you happy in Eretz Israel? You know, are you happy there? So what does happy mean? Do I have a better time when I come to America? You know, shopping is better here, no question about it. There is no mitzvah to shop in Israel. There's a mitzvah, right, to shop here, especially when things are on sale. Shopping is better here, entertainment is better here, you know, certain things are, but quality of life and where the future of the Jewish people is, right, is definitely there in Israel. And God has given us a gift, and it's something that all of us should think about. So, Mirat Hashem, we should be Zohar. If we're not yet Zohar to actually live in Eretz Israel, at least in the future, to think about making Eretz Israel our home. And Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.